Hello and welcome. We're here this evening to conclude our third lecture with respect to corporate formation. This is all about the organizational meeting. Previously tonight, we spoke about pre-incorporation, how promoters work with potential investors to sell subscriptions. We talked about the process of incorporation, how you have an incorporator who could be a promoter, but often are not, and certainly don't have to be, where they turn around and marshal all the paperwork for the Office of Secretary of State to form the corporation. Nothing more important than the certificate of incorporation, which is the constitution of the corporation. And the certificate of incorporation sets forth what the corporation does and what its name is and what its powers are, any limitations that it has. It sets forth the overall direction that that corporation is going to go. It's required under Article 4 of the Business Corporation Law, and what's in it is required under that article. And lastly, we wrapped up with the mechanics of incorporation and how you physically bring that corporation into being by drafting that certificate of incorporation and then delivering it to the Office of the Secretary of State together with the filing fees and any taxes or other fees that are required. You bring that to the Secretary of State and they will file it. Remember that filing is not discretionary. If you've complied with all the provisions of the business corporation law, they have to file it, and filing is proof of incorporation. They'll give you a receipt and you'll go forward and start the corporation on the day of the filing. Now, that doesn't mean that it's perfected on that day, because remember, and that's why we're talking about it tonight, you have to hold a organizational meeting. If you don't hold that meeting, it really doesn't become a corporation, despite the fact that officially it starts on the day of filing. You have to, under the BCL, comply with the organizational meeting in order to really go forward and become a corporation. At the organizational meeting, and we're going to talk about this tonight, you issue shares, you elect directors, you appoint officers, and you adopt bylaws and other ancillary resolutions that help the corporation move forward. Lastly, later tonight, we're going to do a class exercise where we'll wrap it all together and do a program, So You Want to Start a Business. Talks about how you form the corporation, from soups to nuts, and applies everything we've discussed on tonight. So let's jump in. Again, a little bit of review. A corporation is a legal entity. It's an artificial person under the law. It's a concept. It's a creature of law. It's a legal construct. No one's ever seen one. No one ever will. But at the end of the day, it is an organization that arises from the business corporation law. It's that artificial person under the law. Its existence is distinct from that of the individuals who manage it. It's different than the shareholders or the directors or the officers or the employees. It is its own artificial person. It acts as a unit with representative Republican governance. It's within the scope of powers that are conferred to it under the business corporation law. It has limited liability, meaning any investment a shareholder makes is limited only to that investment. So if the corporation goes on to lose money, they can't go after them for more money other than the original investment they make. Because it is an artificial person, under the law, it has corporate personhood, and hence has all entity powers. It can sue and be sued. It can turn around and borrow money. It can sign contracts. It can engage in contracts. It can turn around and do so many things, including have rights, and we'll get to that in a second. It's operated by, as we said before, representative Republican governance principles, whereby you have a board of directors that is elected by the shareholders. That board of directors appoints officers to implement the policy that the board of directors puts forward in their resolutions. And then the employers or the employees are hired by the officers to do the work of the corporation. A corporation has a continuity of existence. That means it can be perpetual or for a term of years, has free transferability of interest, meaning as a shareholder, I can sell my shares. I don't have to hold on to them. I don't have to get permission. I can sell them at any time. The corporation is created under the terms of the Business Corporation Law in New York, and it has constitutional rights. It has the right of free speech and free association. It has the right of due process. It doesn't have the right of privileges and immunities. Remember, it can be discriminated in other states, and New York State can discriminate against non-domestic corporations. Those are corporations that are not founded in New York State. It does have the right of equal protection. So all corporations founded in New York State have to be treated the same, but you don't have to treat them the same with respect to foreign corporations. Okay, let's jump in. The powers of the corporation, last review. You can own and transfer property, lend and borrow money, buy and sell securities, make contracts, compensate employees, officers, directors, and participate in ventures with other companies. It has, most importantly, that major residuary power, which says under the Business Corporation Law, as long as it's not prohibited by another state statute or within the Business Corporation Law, they can do it. So generally they put in all lawful activities as a power within your certificate of incorporation. Can make contributions, both charitable and political. Remember, there are limits on what they can do on that because of the fact that you have to operate your business as for a business for profit. And if you're just going around giving away all your profits, that could be a breach of the fiduciary duty to the corporation. Additionally, with respect to political contributions, natural people have campaign limits, so do corporations. Those limits still apply to the corporations. In New York State, a corporation can only give $5,000 to all candidates combined in a cycle. It can indemnify its directors, officers, and employees, and it can acquire its own shares and can hold shares of stock as treasury stock. Let's talk a little bit about what direction we're going to go for the organizational meeting. We talked before about the pre-incorporation activities, then the formation of the corporation by means of filing the certificate with the Office of Secretary of State, and complying with all the requirements. And now we're going to get to the organizational meeting. Remember that the when you do the legal process of incorporation, the corporation actually comes into existence when the certificate of incorporation is filed by the Secretary of State. However, it's not perfected, means that the corporation can't really operate until that organizational meeting. And that organizational meeting is required for proper formation of the corporation. After corporate existence has begun, that's the filing date, an organizational meeting of the incorporator or incorporators, because you need to have at least one, you can have multiple, must be held. It is required. It's not something that they can pass off. There is a provision whereby if all the incorporators agree, then you can go an alternative route of basically doing everything with paper, but that never happens. And it's tough to do that because you have to have the issuance of shares and then you have to have the election anyway. So by and large, the organizational meeting is always held. The purpose of the meeting is for the adoption of bylaws, the election of directors, the issuance of shares, and the transaction of such other business as may be necessary for the corporation. If there are two or more incorporators, the meeting would be held at the call of the incorporators, and they have to give 5 days notice by mail to each other, and notice need not be given to any incorporator who attends the meeting or submits a signed waiver. So, but by and large, they give 5 days notice there, hold the meeting. If there's more than two incorporators, which there almost always is, a majority shall constitute a quorum for this meeting, and an incorporator may act in person or by proxy. And one of the things you will find with corporate governance is proxy votes are allowed. You can give a written vote on what you want to do. And as we said, there can be an alternative to a meeting instead of holding the meeting if each and every incorporator signs an instrument saying that it doesn't need to happen and that we can do that procedurally by right. Again, that never happens because there's stuff that still needs to get done in order to perfect the corporation. The first thing that happens at the procedural meeting, it gets called to order by the incorporators, and the first thing that they do is issue the authorized shares. The authorization for how many shares get issued is in the articles of incorporation in that certificate, and then you look at how many subscriptions will be sold. That is how you issue the shares, is pursuant to the subscriptions, because the authorization contains not only the subscriptions but also any additional shares you wish to sell at the organizational meeting in case somebody wants to buy more stock, basically take on a new subscription, or more importantly, in case they want to hold it as treasury stock, that is stock that the corporation holds that has yet to be sold. Define what is an authorized share. It's one of the definite number of equal parts into which the capital stock of a corporation is divided and which represents an equity ownership interest in the corporation. Okay. Shares must be represented by signed certificates. That's how they are represented. So if you have 20 shares, you have a certificate that says you have 20 shares that is signed by the chairman or vice chairman of the board of the corporation. Just something that you ought to know, that the stock certificate is only evidence of your share ownership. So if you're a shareholder and have a stock certificate, it is only evidence that you own that, because it's got to be recorded by the secretary. And the reason why it's got to be recorded is that way the secretary knows who's voting the share. So as that, you become the registered, when it gets recorded by the secretary of the corporation, that way you know who's voting. Every share is entitled, if it's common stock, is entitled to one vote. So it's not one person, one vote, it's one share, one vote. So if I own 400 shares, I'm entitled to 400 votes. The certificate of incorporation controls the stock issuance, because that's where it says how many shares are authorized. And the corporation issues the number of authorized shares. Now, not all of the authorized shares are purchased. Only those that are sold by subscription, or only those that are sold subsequent to that, are provided in an issuance to those individual shareholders. Everything else remains as treasury stock. And time of issuance takes place at the organizational meeting. The payment for the shares has to be made by delivery. So if you get that stock certificate, you got to pay for it. Treasury stock is that which is left over. It's the difference between the shares that get issued out to shareholders and the authorized number in the certificate. As we said before, each share entitles the shareholder to one vote if it's common stock. It's not common stock, it's not voting stock, so you don't have that rule, but most stock is common stock. If it's preferred stock, it is a set of stock that doesn't get a voting right. It's an investment vehicle, and we'll talk about that when we talk about shares. But at the end of the day, it's common stock that gets you voting rights, voting for things like the board of directors and certain other things that the certificate of incorporation allows shareholders to vote on. Now, after you issue the shares of stock, and you got to do that first because that share gets the person who is the shareholder the right to vote. So you can't hold the election for the board of directors until you know who's going to vote in it. And that is done by the selling and issuance of the shares. So once you have the shareholders take the stock, call to order is made by the incorporators, and they hold an election for the board of directors. The size of the board of directors is generally contained within the certificate, but when it's not, it can be placed in the bylaws. But the election for the board is done at this organizational meeting, and you get a vote per share. So if you have 400 shares, you get 400 votes. If you have 10 shares, you get 10 votes, so on and so forth. And that the board is elected, each candidate is elected, just like any other election, by a majority vote. So if there's multiple candidates running, then the candidate with the most votes wins that office, which is the board of directors. Once the board of directors are elected, they will convene a meeting of the board, and that is chaired by the chairman of the board of directors, who's elected generally out of the other board members. So the other board members are the ones who select the chairman of the board. And it can be in a certificate that the shareholders select that person, but generally it is a vote of the board itself. And once you create that board, then it can hold its first meeting, and that is at the organizational meeting. A majority vote of the board of directors, everyone gets an equal vote on the board generally, and that vote determines what happens on those resolutions that come before the board. So if the board wants to choose Trustco Bank, for instance, as the bank of the corporation, the majority of the board has to vote in favor of doing that, and that's a board resolution. Those resolutions are written and they must be recorded. So the majority vote gets it to pass, but it's got to be recorded, and it's a majority of all of the board of directors, not just those who show up for the meeting. So if you have 13 boards, members of the board of directors, then it takes 7 votes in order to pass a resolution. And those resolutions have to be in writing, and those are the ones that get voted on. The length of terms of the board members are generally staggered. They are generally placed in certificate of incorporation, but they can be done by bylaws. And the initial election, everybody on the board is elected at the initial election, but they generally have staggered terms, so 6 of the board of directors will be elected at another time, 2 years from now, so that they have staggered rolling terms generally on that. But length of the terms is generally within the certificate or within the bylaws. The corporation's first board of directors is elected at the organizational meeting. Subsequent elections are held at the corporation's annual meeting. The corporation's got to have a meeting once a year, and that's when they elect the replacement board of directors. Once the board is elected, they can hold their meetings, and they have the ability to adopt resolutions, which are the policy of the corporation. One of the first things that they're going to do with those resolutions is appoint officers. Where the policy decisions of the corporation are made by the board of directors, those policy decisions are implemented, executed, if you will, by the officers of the corporation, who are the appointed managers of the corporation. They're appointed unless the certificate says so. They're appointed by the board of directors. Some corporations have them voted on by the shareholders, but that's rare. The overwhelming majority of officers are appointed by the board of directors. The officers of the corporation are appointed by board resolution. They write them all down, who they're selecting. If they're contested in the election, they have multiple nominations, they vote for the majority. It has to have a majority vote to elect one. And the officers in the corporation that they appoint are chief executive officer, who runs the corporation, and the chief staff member of the entire organization. The president is the head of the corporation, but takes a back seat in organizations where there's a chief executive officer. And where that is the case, the president is almost a figurehead position because it's the chief executive officer who runs the corporation. Vice presidents, and there are generally multiple of corporations, generally are responsible for a division within the corporation. So if your corporation makes Oreo cookies and makes cigarettes, well, the vice president, you'll have one which is in charge of cookies and one who's in charge of cigarettes. They tend to be mini CEOs, chief executive officers, because they run their individual division. The chief financial officer is the person who handles all the books and the money of the corporation. But just like with the chief executive officer and the president, when you don't have a chief executive officer, the president plays that whole role. Well, where you don't have a treasurer, the chief financial officer plays that role. And when you don't have the chief financial officer, the treasurer plays the role of the finance record keeping of the corporation. And lastly, you have the secretary of the corporation, who's not only responsible for sending out all the correspondence of the corporation with other parties, but most importantly, that's the person who records who has the votes anytime you have an election involving the corporation. The term of office of officers is generally also provided in the certificate of incorporation or in the bylaws, and generally it's runs until the next annual meeting of the shareholders, but doesn't have to. It's up to whatever the certificate was drafted and how it thought of it. The first appointment of the initial officers is going to be at the organizational meeting, but it should be noted that any officer appointed by the board of directors may also be removed by the board of directors, and even without cause. They work for the board, and if the board is unhappy with their progress, the board can ask for their resignation and fire them. And they can remove them. And it doesn't take any special vote. It's a majority vote of the board of directors, and they have the power to hire and fire these officers. Now, like we said, the certificate of incorporation is the constitution of the corporation. Its bylaws are like its statutes. Certificate of incorporation puts out the grand framework of the policies of the corporation. The bylaws govern its day-to-day affairs that its shareholders, directors, and officers need to know about. Bylaws are adopted by the board of directors, and when authorized by the certificate of incorporation, the shareholders don't vote on that generally. They can, it's in the certificate, but absent that, it's done by the board of directors. Bylaws are subordinate. That means they are like the statute. They can't overrule the Constitution. And in this case, the Constitution being the certificate of incorporation. They can't be inconsistent with that certificate. They can't be inconsistent with the laws of the state, especially the business corporation law. They have to be in what they call conformance. If they're not, then the bylaw provision is not effective. Bylaws are valid and are binding on all shareholders, directors, and employees of the corporation. They have the same effect as the corporation certificate, but at the end of the day, they're still binding. And regardless of whether or not the directors, shareholders, officers, and employees knew that bylaw provision was there. Again, ignorance of the law is no excuse. And as long as it's adopted by a majority of the board, it is in effect. The initial bylaws of the corporation are adopted at the organizational meeting, and thereafter bylaws may be adopted, amended, or repealed pursuant to a majority vote of the directors. Now here it says bylaws are adopted by the incorporators. That is the case in the event that there's no board yet. Well, where there is a board, the board adopts them. So if they do it right, they'll create a board and the board will adopt the bylaws. If they don't wish to go down that road and the incorporators want to run the entire organizational meeting, then the incorporators can vote for and approve the bylaws. What is contained within the bylaws? It is the conduct of affairs, the rights or powers of the corporation, the rights and powers of the shareholders, directors, officers, employees that are not inconsistent with the business corporation law. If it's inconsistent, obviously the business corporation law or any other state statute is controlling. That's all we have for how you form a corporation. We're now going to go over shortly into our exercise. We'll bring everything together and talk about how all this works in practical format. But remember, the first thing you have is the pre-incorporation, the promoters selling those subscriptions. Then you have incorporators who could be the promoters or different people, either one, who actually marshal all the forms together, because there's a ton of written forms you need to file, draft the certificate of incorporation, and then be able to provide this Office of Secretary of State with a filing of the certificate, any other documents that they need, such as, hey, we reserve this name, and you provide that over to the Secretary of State together with the filing fee. Remember, the standard filing fee is $125, but there's also sometimes taxes due or other licensing fees due, and you pay all of that, and that corporation gets established. That's when it originates, the date of the filing. The Secretary of State will give you a receipt for the certificate, and then you hold that organizational meeting. And at that organizational meeting, remember, what are the things you're going to do? You're going to turn around, you're going to issue the shares, you're going to hold an election for the initial board of directors. That board of directors is then going to pass resolutions, including things like a bank resolution saying this is where they're going to put their money. They're going to appoint the officers of the corporation. That's done by resolution two. And any other business they view as important or they have to do in order to get the corporation up and running. And then then you turn around and they adopt the bylaws. Again, the certificates like the Constitution, bylaws are statutory. Bylaws are much more specific than the certificate, and they deal with individual items as well as the generality. After you adopt those bylaws, you're ready to roll as a corporation. You're going to be holding corporate board meetings. You're going to discuss the issues of what you want to do as a corporation. That's all done at the board meeting, and we'll talk about that next time. Thank you so much for watching. Now we're going to go on in just a few moments to our class exercise. See you shortly.